Moncrief on News Talk. Movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
We are joined once again by Fionnuala Jones, Leslie Williams and Esther McCarthy. Good afternoon to you both, to you all.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Hi, Sean.
Good. You're all coming in loud and clear. Leslie, is it Spain we're visiting today?
Yes. Northern Spain. Not the kind of place. Well, it's where I was going to go on my holidays this year, but I'm not going there anymore, obviously. But so I'm going to talk about it to you instead. Godello is the grape in the white wine, and then Tempranillo, Ribera del Duero for the red. Godello is less well known, but it should be better known. And that's what I'm going to try and convince you all.
Right. OK. Yes. Tempranillo, of course, lots of people would know that one. And Esther, yet another Billie Holiday film, not too long after a previous one.
Yeah, that was actually, are you talking about the Diana Ross one? Because I couldn't believe that was actually 1972.
Right. Wasn't there a Billie Holiday documentary that were out recently? Or am I raving?
There was, I think. Yeah. There was a documentary, yeah. I think. Yeah, but this is the first feature in a while, actually. Andra Day here, the American R&B singer, going on the camera for the first time, and she's really, really great here. The film, not so much. It's a bit cluttered. It's a bit of a mess. But it has a power to it, I have to say, and it focuses. It's not your standard music biopic, this one. It takes a specific angle, namely the power of that song, Strange Fruit, and how it scared America when she recorded it and started to perform it, and the consequences for her. So it's a really interesting story, I have to say.
Right. Is it, though, about the song, or is it about the Billie Holiday taking drugs?
Basically, she started performing Strange Fruit, which is about a lynching of black people and about a shocking, you know, inspired by a poem, which is itself inspired by a shocking photograph that was published back in the 1930s. And she basically took this poem and put it to song and recorded it. And basically the FBI were furious. They feared an uprising in North America at that time against what was going on in the South. And they couldn't arrest her for singing a song, but they could arrest her if they found she had narcotics. So it put her on the radar of the narcotics branch of the FBI. So they kind of made her life a misery because, as we know, Billie Holiday had a lifelong struggle with drugs and which cut her life short, actually.
Right,
so it's kind of, it should be called The Feds versus Billie Holiday, really.
It's called The United States versus Billie Holiday, which sounds a bit more.
The United States kind of loved her. That's what the feds were scared about.
Yes. And Flora and Ulysses, this is a kids one.
Yeah, we haven't done a kids movie in ages, so I thought that, you know, they've probably watched everything on Netflix at this stage. So this is sweet. It's lovely. It's about a superhero squirrel, and I kind of really enjoyed it, but I might just be losing it at this stage, Sean, to be honest. It's really sweet. It's on Disney Plus, and it's got a lovely cast as well. I really enjoyed this one, I have to say.
Okay,
it's based on a young, it's a young adult novel adaptation. So there's a lot of depth and drama in there as well.
Right. Carla wants to know, Esther, does Esther expect James Corden to sweep the Golden Globes this weekend? He must be so excited.
I mean, I can't believe the guy was even nominated, to be honest with you. I mean, I've seen The Prom and it's an enjoyable film, but for Corden to be nominated and not Meryl Streep was one of a very many anomalies, shall we say. And I think the LA Times did it's a really good read if you haven't read it. They did a takedown of the Golden Globes this week and a kind of an investigation involving some people who were anonymous but were involved in the organisation, and it didn't reflect well on them at all, I have to say.
Oh, wow. In what way?
There was lots of questions. I suppose because they're such a small body, there's only 80-something membership, that they're ripe to, you know, to play the jury, basically, and give lots of free stuff. Whereas with the Oscars, there could be thousands of voters on any branch, and it's just harder, I suppose, to corrupt, you know. And the LA Times, it's a really good piece. It's very investigative in detail, and it involves a few people who tried to apply as well and weren't allowed for very not explainable reasons, you know. So it's kind of, is this a little cartel, I suppose, was the take on it. It wouldn't be the first time the people have investigated Globes, but I think the timing of it this year is very interesting.
Right, okay, yeah. There's somebody else texting in, what's the alternative? Another year of Meryl Streep being nominated. Boring. Sorry. It's for actual acting. Fionnuala, do you take part in the James Corden hate?
Yeah, I'm not a theory. He really does nothing for me, and I was as surprised as Esther and everyone else, I think. So, I mean, but as that texter said, he's going to have a good time, so what does it matter to us?
I suppose he does, yeah. No, because I saw there was a clip from Stephen Fry there yesterday in another interview where he kind of, he wasn't having a go at James Corden, but he was maybe blaming the direction of the film, saying that Corden was, his depiction of a gay man was a kind of a splashy 1970s kind of version of a gay man. Rather than anything recognisable. Anyway, Fionnuala, let's talk about Rosamund Pike's boobs. Obviously, it's a subject close to many people's hearts. What's happened to them?
Yes, my favourite topic of discussion. She's come out recently and slammed the airbrushing that's gone on for some of the movie posters she's been in. So I don't know if anyone here remembers Johnny English Reborn. Probably not. No. And then you definitely don't remember the poster that went along with that. But she revealed in an interview recently that for that particular poster in which she stars alongside Rowan Atkinson, her chest seemed to have been doctored in a certain way that made her seem like, and this is her own quote, it gave her a really impressive chest, which she said she doesn't have. But this is a common thing that happens with her, apparently. There was another movie where she starred as Polish physicist Marie Curie, and they changed her eye colour from to brown, which she doesn't know why, still doesn't know why. She said she's had to push back on it a couple of times as well, the airbrushing of her on certain movie posters. But yeah, really strange phenomenon, and to even think that this is still happening to predominantly women, it's very sad. It's very, just shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, well, I don't know. If they gave James Corden bigger boobs, that wouldn't be a bit disturbing for everybody in the posters. I did, because I did see this and I saw the poster, and if there was a difference, it wasn't a massive difference. I you know, if I hadn't been told, I would have said maybe she's wearing a push-up bra. But it wasn't like, you know, suddenly she'd a massive pair of breasts or anything.
Yeah, I think it's because, I think it's just when it's yourself, yeah, and you see that and you're like, that doesn't look like me at all. It must be very strange. And then to have that as a celebrity, as someone who's in movie and on the screen, and to just be blasted with your image all the time, and then to see something so radically different to you, it must be very strange and very kind of alarming, I would imagine.
Yeah, every photograph I see of me, I think that's not me at all. I'm a 27 year old man with long hair. What the hell's going on? So Leslie, let's have a drink. What did we talk about first?
Great. So first wine is from Val d'Oras. Val d'Oras is a small province of a small part of Galicia. So you're in the northwest part of Spain, right there, just above Portugal. It's not a region most people have heard of. The grape there is Godello, or Godello is how they would pronounce it, G-O-D-E-L-L-O. So everyone thinks of this part of the world of drinking Albarino. And, you know, we drink vast quantities of Albarino in Ireland. And so this is similar but different. It's got similar texture to Albarino. And similar kind of weight, but it's much more, it's got more minerality, it's got a little bit more oomph to it, it's a little bit more kind of textural complexity, I would say, although obviously it depends on the producer. But this one is from a producer called Rafael Palacios, and he's a bit of a superstar in the wine world. His brother Alvaro Palacios is the man who kind of revived Priorat, and they're both actually from Rioja originally, but it's arguable that he's going to do the exact same for Godello in Val d'Oras. Godello, it was kind of almost gone in the 1970s. There was like a couple of hundred vines left, and then there was this sort of revival where a couple of producers got together and decided to try and save this vine. And the first bottled Godello, labeled Godello, was only in the 1980s, so it's relatively new in the sense that, you know, it isn't, and it's still not one that you will see that often. You have to kind of look for it. You have to go to sort of specialist off licenses to find it. Palacios makes a couple of wines, and the best one is Assortus, which is about €45, but I decided to try and save people's bank balance by going for the slightly lighter one that he makes, which is Lura, L-O-U-R-A, which is about $24.99. It's in kind of places like Green Man Wines, Baggot Street Wines. If you're down the country, S-A-Y-P-S will sell it. That's Sips, S-A-Y-P-S, Sommelier in Your Pocket, which is a really good site for kind of unusual wines. But it's just this gorgeous sort of light gold color. Valour is actually means kind of valley of gold, but the Romans robbed that years ago. So all we're left now is a few golden colored wines. But it's just this lovely textured, ripe, rich wine with sort of lovely peach and kind of minerality and by which I mean kind of stone flavors and so on. Like as if you picked a stone from a river. Obviously, you probably don't lick that, but the smell, if you can think of the smell as you pick a stone from a river on a warm day. To throw into the river again or something. I don't know, it's one of my favorite grapes. And if you can't find this one, just in general, Godello is worth looking out for. You also get it in a little bit in Monterey, which is southern Galicia. You get it in Ribera Sacra, and it's kind of grown in a few other. It's starting slowly to get popular again. But we tend to think of Spain only with red wines, when in fact, you know, their white wines are often. Is interesting, you know?
Yeah, and good, and an easy name to remember. Lura ain't that difficult. A few questions though for you, Leslie.
Sure.
Douglas says, I have no luck with wine glasses. My wife bought me a set for Christmas and I've broken all six of them. It's a costly misfortune I have. Is it wrong to drink out of plastic glasses?
No. Go for the finest, thinnest plastic you can get. Do you know what I mean? Like really thin. Look, I mean, I break glasses constantly. My solution at the moment is tumblers, the tumbler wine glasses that don't have a stem on them. Mm. I don't break those as often. Mitchell's have some lovely ones, which are the Riedel ones. They import them. There's ones for different grape varieties and so on, and they're good. When shops are open again, the likes of TK Maxx actually often will have sort of tumbler. Tumblers are quite fashionable again. Not everyone likes getting greasy paw prints over, but you just, honestly, you don't break them as easily, and you can put them in the dishwasher. But yeah, look, if you want to drink it out of a coffee mug, I mean, do. But it's going to taste better out of the thinnest glass possible. I'm going to give a shout out to one more glass. So Riedel is a famous one, right? But Zalto glasses, oh my God. Zalto glasses, Zalto, from Austria. They're hand-blown, so they're €30 a glass or so. But
whoa!
Yeah, I know, but that's not... Hand-blown Riedels are about twice that. But Saracens in Monkstown bring them in. And oh my God, when you taste wine from a Zalto glass, you will literally not want to drink it from anything else. They are incredibly thin. Anybody who's eaten in, I'm sure, that two-star Michelin restaurant down there in Kildare, they only use Zalto glasses, which is... I'll stop talking with them now, but they're... Yes. I'll bring you in one.
I wonder do many people steal glasses off them. Jill says, I know it's grown in a border region of the Basque Country, but is Rioja also the main wine you find in the Basque Country? I only ask because I took a journey in the region years back and loved the wine, but can't really remember what I mainly would have been drinking. My memory may be compromised somewhat.
I mean, it's not strictly speaking the Basque region. It's south of there. But I mean, the Basques themselves, they mainly drink a white wine called Chacoli, Txacoli, or Chacolina, if you say it in Spanish. I don't think on the French side of the Basque Country, there's some red wines made from Tanat, which is the same grape that you get in Madaran and places like that. That's the red wine that's good for your heart with all the tannins in it and so on. Spanish Basque Country, I've only ever really seen Chacoli. I can't think of any red wines from there. But look, you're very near. I mean, it's only an hour down south of there. So if you were drinking red wine in the Basque Country in San Sebastian, you more than likely would be Rioja. It's like Haro is about an hour south of there. So, but strictly speaking, well, it depends on how they certainly don't speak Basque in the Rioja Country. That's for sure. You know,
can you freeze wine in ice cube trays to use again? I just hate dumping the end of a bottle. Such a waste, especially when we live in a throwaway culture.
You can. It doesn't freeze particularly well, so you end up with sort of watery ones. Can I make a suggestion? I have little jam jars specifically for this purpose. If I pour the wine and in various sizes, but if it doesn't fill the glass, the important thing here is air. The air is what will make it go off. If I even if it's half full of a jam jar, if you top that up with water, you're going to be using water in your cooking anyway. So why not just add it into the wine? It's not going to affect the wine. You're not going to be drinking this. It's for pouring into your bolognese sauce or your stew or whatever. So just top it up with wine. Air is the only thing that will damage it. And if it's poured up right at the top and then the lid put on, it'll keep just better that way. You can can do that. Can I make one more suggestion, actually? I confess I'm sad enough to do this. I make a lot of stock in the house. I don't use stock cubes. So what I do is when I've made a stock, like from a chicken, I will sometimes throw a half a bottle of wine or a similar amount of wine and then reduce it further down to about, you know, into not quite syrup, but into like a cupful. And that's effectively demi-glace. And that freezes amazingly. And it adds the richest, ripest, sweetest stock and wine flavor to your food.
Right. John in Cork says, since I lived in Portugal in the late 80s, I have always drunk my wine out of a tumbler. If it's good enough for the locals in Lisbon, it's good enough for me. And Renee says, I tend to break glasses when I'm drying them. I don't know my own strength and smash them in my hand. I lost three this month, says Renee. God.
Well, one reason she's possibly doing that is she's holding it by the stem. You must always hold the glass by the bowl using either a very large tea towel and hold the bowl with one side, or use two tea towels, which is what I sometimes do, and then gently clean inside, holding the bowl with the other hand. Never hold it by the stem or you will snap them. But if you do that, keep them, because you can then stick them in the ground for picnics as a little spike. You know?
All right, okay. Yeah, a good tip. So be careful, Renee, or next thing you know, you're going to lose a finger. So, Esther, what movie would you like to do first?
Oh, let's definitely do The United States versus Billie Holiday.
Yeah. Okay, Billie Holiday coming up after this.
Why don't you ever sing Strange Fruit?
Strange Fruit. I'm going to be pretty high to sing that one.
Never heard you sing it.
It's a song about important things, you know. Things that are going on in the country. I don't think people know I care about those things. Most of my other songs are just about love.
Well, love is important too, right?
That's the United States versus Billie Holiday. So it's not a kind of start to finish biopic then, Esther?
No, and my favourite focus on it in the whole film was on that song. Now, it's a pretty unfocused film, I haven't said that. But the song, like, she stood on stage in New York City one night in 1939 and sang Strange Fruit. And, you know, here was a black woman in front of a mixed audience, I suppose, singing about racist murder in the United States, you know, and I don't think anybody had heard anything like it before. And it was dangerous, and it scared the authorities. And within days of her singing that song in New York, she received her first threat from the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, because, as I mentioned, like, they couldn't really stop her from singing a song. You know, they couldn't really charge her. There was no law there against that. But what they did know on her was there was a lot of dirt on Billie Holiday. Of course, she was a wild one, and she would have been a regular heroin user at this stage, as were a lot of her entourage. So they kind of got at her that way, you know. And they got a guy, it was a guy by the name of Harry Anslinger, the head of the FBI narcotics. It was he who tasked this young black agent by the name of Jimmy Fletcher to form a bond with her and befriend her and then track her every move and try and bring her down, basically. And she ended up doing time. She ended up being jailed. And she wasn't the kind of woman who was told, you're not singing the song, though, you know. And she says, there's one really good line at the film, like, they don't like my song Strange Fruit because it reminds them that they're killing us. And I thought that was a really powerful thread to this film, which is directed by Lee Daniels, who brought us a film called Precious a few years ago. It's a lovely film, but not a subtle bone in its body. Mm. And I can definitely say the same about this one, you know. There's a great real life story there, but it feels like he needs to over egg it all the time and to make everything a bit shouty. It's too long as well. It's nearly 2 hours and 20 minutes, this, and has no real need to be. Very unfocused. It'll frustrate people to watch. Yet it just has this kind of power and rage in it that carries the film over the line. But what really carries this film, and if it was a better film, we would be talking about shoo-in for Oscar, I think, is Andra Day's performance here. She's a fairly well-known singer in the US. Not so much in this part of the world, I think, but it's her first time you know, Andra Day, it was like she was named to play Billie Holiday, you know, whose nickname was Lady Day. Mm. In fact, Lee Daniels said so many people suggested her to him that he hates being told what to do, when he actually stalled for a lot longer than he should have, instead of just looking at what was in front of his nose. And she's just brilliant. She has that stage presence that a performer has. Does she sound like Billie Holiday? Do we even want her to, I would say. But she definitely has got her mannerism, her style of performance. And she is a gifted enough vocalist, I think, to not let the singing be a distraction and to fall into the acting then, you know. So it's a very wise piece of casting.
Yeah, and she has such a Billie Holiday has such a distinctive voice. It would be fruitless to try and imitate that.
Absolutely. Who wants a copy anyway? You know? But no, she's not unlike her, I would say. I mean, that raspy style and that kind of, you know, famously didn't have a huge range, Billie Holiday, and had to adapt her style to suit that. But that's all there. But the performance of Strange Fruit in the film is just really astonishing. As I said, though, it's a bit all over the place. There's a lot of focus on she has an affair with the FBI agent, Jimmy Fletcher. There's a lot of focus on that, and I haven't even been able to establish if that's true or not.
Right.
And I've been combing the internet looking to find out.
But was there there was a real Jimmy Fletcher though, was it? Or did they have to
There was a real Jimmy Fletcher, absolutely. And she did have a lot of a lot of love in her life, both male and female. So, you know, it's plausible, but I just couldn't establish if it's fact or not. And there's definitely a lot of emphasis put on that. So that's a bit of questionable. I thought, you know, just it's the song for me, and it's the amount she's willing to suffer to keep performing that song and to keep being an agitator. You know, they do not make her life easy. But what I did like about this as well is, you know, you hear the word tragic around the name Billie Holiday so often. This film really fleshes her out. It doesn't paint her merely as a victim, though you see the effects of those desperate struggles with drugs and those bad relationships. Like, she's a really, really tricky relationship with her husband at the time. But you get to meet the badass diva in all her chaos and her glory. And I loved it for that. And it's a wonderful, wonderful performance, man, Andra Day. Gareth Hedlund's very good as well as Harry Anslinger, the baddie who's trying to put her away. And Trevante Rhodes is Jimmy Fletcher. You'll remember him from the last segment of Moonlight. He was brilliant in it. And he's back here again with a lovely screen presence. Underused a bit, I would say, maybe given the focus on that element of the story, maybe underused a little, but it's great. It's, I mean, she was the first badass diva, really, and I didn't know this story. I mean, I knew she had a bit of a mad life and a colourful life, and she is, like, this is very funny in places as well, like the heroin use is there, but the chaos of life on the road with Billie Holiday is dealt with in quite humorously in places as well.
All right.
But yeah. I didn't know this story. Like, I knew, obviously everyone remembers hearing Strange Fruit for the first time and the hair is standing up in the back of your neck, but I didn't know this story. I didn't know how much she provoked the States in the late 1930s, early 40s
indeed.
At that time. It's really interesting.
Somebody's emailed in to say Billie Holiday didn't write Strange Fruit. I don't know. Did Billie Holiday write anything, really? I don't know if she wrote that much material that she sang.
It's based on a poem that was written by a Jewish school teacher saw a photograph of a lynching.
Yeah, Abel Mirapol, the son of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, that were executed for being communists, so the charge was espionage, in 1953. Originally a poem called Bitter Fruit, it was written by the Jewish school teacher Abel Mirapol under the pseudonym Lewis Allen in response to lynching in the US Southern States. I wrote Strange Fruit because I hate lynching, I hate injustice, and I hate the people who perpetuate it, Mirapol said in 1971. Wow.
And she arranged the music in it as well. So she did take, I suppose, a piece of folklore in the South that wasn't known in the North US and make it her own, you know, and do something very powerful with it.
Oh, yeah. James, on a different subject completely, says, I'm afraid to say, I think I found the only Tom Hanks movie is a bit boring in, and I lasted throughout all of the Washington Post. This is that movie from a few weeks back, News of the World, is not great. It's clear now that he hasn't done Westerns before. Poor Tom. Not a great one. Says James. Oh gosh, you thought it was a bit long though anyway, didn't you?
It was okay. I mean, it was okay. I expected more from Paul Greengrass. I think he's a really good filmmaker and he's worked with Tom Hanks and brought out the best in him before, but it was just a bit ponderous, I think.
Yeah.
It's safe.
Yeah, but yes. Yeah, indeed. Though I loved the Washington Post movie, but maybe like we're biased.
Too.
Yeah, it's an age and profession thing, perhaps. Right.
True.
So, Fionnuala, Daisy Ridley and Ted Cruz, are they going to have like a lightsaber fight?
Yeah, I'm hoping for some kind of celebrity deathmatch esque event to come up off the back of this. This is cracking story. I love it. So basically, Texas Senator Ted Cruz took a really strange dig at Daisy Ridley's Star Wars character for some reason while defending Gina Carano, who would have been seen most recently in The Mandalorian. She was fired recently after making some strange comments comparing the treatment of American conservatives to the persecution of Jews during the Holocaust. Yeah, needless to say, we'll leave that there. But basically, he kind of said, called her character a bit whingy, Daisy's character, and said that Gina was instrumental in making Star Wars fun again, and said that she wasn't like this emotionally tortured Jedi like Daisy's character is. And she fired back, clapped back, as the Twitterati would say, and said, "I am very happy to be an emotionally tortured Jedi who doesn't leave their state when it's having a terrible time." Sick burn, obviously, off the back of him fleeing Texas in the middle of like one of the worst storms ever, leaving so many of his constituents without power and water while he lived it up in Cancun. So there you go, Ted.
Yeah. Ted, no, he didn't. It wasn't his fault. It was his kids' fault. He blamed his children for forcing him to bring them there.
Ah, yes. Those pesky kids.
Yeah, moaning and looking for stuff. Your woman, though, Gina Carano, I think she'd had form. That wasn't the only thing she'd said over the years that was a bit on the dodgy side.
No, definitely not. She's a bad record when it comes to speaking on trans people and stuff like that. This was very much like a fifth or sixth strike and you're out. It was well overdue. Obviously, that's just my opinion. But yeah, like The Mandalorian will be fine. They don't need her, in my opinion. So.
Yeah. Was she always an actor or did she do something before acting? Oh,
I don't know if I'd be the right person to ask about that.
Yeah,
but
no,
I think she's done smaller things, but...
No, I've just been told she was a wrestler. Because, you know, she looks like she was a wrestler or something of that nature.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go. That explains that. Right. OK, we have one more movie, one more wine to talk about after this. You're listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. Esther, Leslie and Fionnuala are still with us. We've already talked about some Hollywood news and one wine and one movie, that being the movie being the United States versus Billie Holiday. What's the name of the Galician wine again? It's Lura, is it?
Luro. L-O-U-R-O.
Yeah. I bought, another texter says, I bought a Mon Banzilac white in a clear bottle for a friend. He has so far failed to pick it up. And after 10 years, the colour has changed from honey to nearly amontillado. It's 2005. Should I use it to sedate myself? I believe it's a dessert wine.
It is a dessert wine, Mont Basiac. It's basically poor man's Sauternes. It's just east of Sauternes. So Sauternes is technically Bordeaux, and Mont Basiac is technically I think it's technically Bordeaux as well. But it's its own little wine region. They're lighter. It could be lovely, you know. It's interesting that it's gone so dark. It shouldn't be gone quite amontillado color. It should be more kind of like a golden syrup honeyed color. Look, you're only going to know when you open it. But I actually think that could have lasted, you know.
Okay.
It's a warm year. It's a wine that does age a bit, you know. It's lovely. It's usually lovely.
Somebody was asking about, can you freeze leftover wine? Someone sexed it in to say, well, many people have actually. I don't understand what's leftover wine. Well, indeed. Can your wine guru recommend a pairing for a crunchy bar? Don't judge me, says Maria.
Hey, you know, 2005 of Masiak would be good, you know. Dark chocolate is interesting. I mean, beer, you know, like good, rich... dark beers, like, say, dark chocolate stouts and Belgian ales, like, say, double Westmalle. But for wine, port, you know, bottle of port, would work.
Mm. You could have wine with it as well, I would have thought, without too much damage. Somebody else wants to know, can you, any advice for a nice white for the wife? It's her birthday on Tuesday, and I think lockdown 3 has been getting her particularly down. She likes 3 Woolly Sheep Sauv Blanc.
Okay, so well, she likes Sauvignon Blanc, you want to stick with that possibly. But if you want to just take her out of her comfort zone a bit, let's stay in northern Spain and go Rueda. Rueda's wines, also northern Spain, they tend to have a Sauvignon Blanc-like character without the same kind of, look, maybe get two. Get her her favorite wine, but then also get something a little bit different. So go into a decent wine shop and look for a bottle of Rueda made from the Verdeco grape, which that has Sauvignon Blanc-like character, and it will just give her something new to taste that she hasn't maybe had before, and that might spark joy, as Marie Kondo would say.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, I hope that's not the only thing you're getting her for her birthday.
Yeah, exactly.
I would have thought. Somebody else wants to know, when you say a movie is too long, what do you mean? How long should it be? I always find it strange because we never say books are too long. Sometimes we do. I suppose if you get a point where you go, oh, come on, get on with it. The hashtag, by the way, is Moody Movies, being John Alkobitch, being one example of that. Right, so Leslie, tell us about our second wine today.
OK, so we're going to stay in northern Spain. If you drive about an hour and a half north of Madrid, the road steadily rises and you end up on this high mountain plain. Now, when you're there, you don't really feel like you're in a mountain plain because it just looks like, because you can't see the mountains because you're on the top of them. You're 800, 1,000 metres above sea level. You're high up. This is sort of more the more extreme areas for high quality red wine. And this is Ribera del Duero. So the Duero River flows all the way across northern Spain into Portugal, where it becomes the Douro, and that's where port is made. So it's a very famous, important wine river. But I was there a couple of years ago, back when we were allowed to travel, and I remember a winemaker saying to me, it was snowing and it was April, and I'm like, cold. And he was like, I said, it should not be getting warm at this point. And he says, no, we get 9 months of winter and 3 months of hell. So you're literally freezing cold all winter, and then you get 3 months of 42, 45, 50 degree heat. But here's the thing, because you're so high up, the temperature then drops down to fridge temperature to 4 or 5 degrees in the evening. So, you know, the sugars in the grape rise up, you get these thick skins, you get rich, rich flavors. And then just as they're about to explode with overheating, the nighttime comes, they cool down, they relax. That maintains the acidity and the and sort of sets in the dark fruit flavors. Grapes take about 60 days to ripen here, where they would take about sort of 40 something days in most other wine regions. Tempranillo is the main red grape, although you are allowed to grow things like Merlot and Cabernet, but in general everyone grows Tempranillo. But it's the clone that they use here is Tinto Fino, which is slightly smaller grapes and slightly looser bunches, just grapes that are slightly more suited to the cold and hot climate, basically, because it's a mixture of both. The wine I've chosen, I could have chosen anything from this region. I love this region. I've gone with Corimbo, which is made by producers, the same people who make Bodegas Roda. Bodegas Roda is a very modern, new style of Rioja, very rich, full flavors, unlike the sort of dustier, kind of more oaked ages, the Riojas that you get. Corimbo is their Bodegas de Jura is their vineyard in Ribera del Duero, and it's just really big black cherry fruits, dark blackberries, and kind of aromatic and a little bit of spice from a little bit of American oak, and it's just like there's eating and drinking in it, you know. And actually, with crunchy, this would be great.
Yeah, right,
this would be great.
Okay, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Flora and Ulysses. Here's a clip.
Did you type this? Do not hope. Observe. Terrible things can happen to you made it very clear that hope can get in the way of action. A true cynic has no luxury for hope, only observation. Ulysses, can you understand me? Holy Bagumba! Can you talk? Okay, that's not really talking, but still! I knew it! The vacuum made you a superhero! It sucked up an unassuming squirrel and spit out a Ulysses.
Right, a lot of plot explanation in that particular clip. Is this an animated or a live action, Esther?
It's live action. Holy gazumba, Sean. I think I might just
indeed.
Go around saying that for the rest of the year. It's lovely, this. It's if you needed to see a movie about a superhero squirrel, this pandemic, this is the one for you. Mm-hmm. And it's a lovely performance by an actress, a young actress by the name of Matilda Lawyer. And I think she has a lovely career ahead of her, should she want it, because she just has the cutest little sad face. She's got a lot to be sad about, because there's a touch of the Jacqueline Wilsons about this, actually, because there's a lot of kind of real life problems within the writing, within the young adult writing. And it's adapted from a very popular novel written by Kate DiCamillo. And she is, her parents are kind of splitting up, and she's 10 and she's struggling with it. And she's obsessed with superheroes. Her mother, who's a romantic novelist, who's played by Alison Hannigan, wants her to kind of read proper kids' books, but she's more interested in superhero comics, and she's been collecting them for years, knows all the traits of all her favourite characters. And one day she's outside, and a neighbor's Hoover has run amok and run down this squirrel, basically, which she rescues from the Hoover and manages to bring back to life. His name is Ulysses, whatever has happened in the bringing back to life process, he's developed superhero qualities. So it's promising to liven up her summer no end, Sean. She's delighted with herself, but she has to try and keep the Ulysses a secret first, because she knows her mum won't let her keep him.
Right. What kind of powers does he have, this girl?
Lots of things. There's little... Well, he can fly really high. I know you say squirrels can fly anyway, but that's just really good jumping normally. Mm. And he can go really fast. But there's lovely little nods to scenes. Like, there's a scene where he's suspended upside down on a rope, and you see Spider-Man right away, you know. So there's lovely little nods to real superhero movies in here. And her dad then is played by Ben Schwartz. He has kind of skin on the game as well. So he's in on the act, because he has long been trying to create his own comic book character. But then, like, has there ever been a kids movie where the animal control officer isn't a baddie? I can't think of one.
Yeah.
And here is no exception. We get a kind of mustache twisting, dastardly animal control officer who gets wind of Ulysses' existence and says, no, we can't have that, health and safety. And he's determined to track him down. So it's just really sweet, this. And it has the backstory of the relationship breakup. So it's fond around this 10-year-old character. The script's very witty as well. It has a spirit of fun I liked about it.
Where can people see this? This is on Disney.
This one's on Disney Plus, which I know a lot of people would have signed up for this week now that they have the additional platform of Star. So if you're new to Disney Plus, this is there for you.
Right.
I should have mentioned as well, the Billie Holiday one is on Sky Cinema.
Right. Okay, great. Okay, that's a handy one. And finally, Fionnuala, Emma Watson is retiring. Why?
She's not. This was the thing. We live in an era of fake news. This started trending on Thursday because of this article from the Daily Mail that suggested she was retiring because she wanted to settle down with her partner, whose name is Leo Robinson.
Who like says, I found somebody I love. I'm moving in with them, so I'll give up my job. Like, who does that?
I mean, if any man out there is willing to do that for me, I am open and available, I will say. But yeah, this seems to be something that just completely grew legs. They said that she's gone dormant, according to her agent. Her agent has now since come out and said that her social media accounts are dormant, but her career definitely isn't. Which makes sense, because she was just recently in Little Women and things like The Circle, and obviously the live action Beauty and the Beast. So she's not retiring. Calm down, everyone.
Right. Okay. Good to know. But Fionnuala, if a man says to you, I'll give up my job for you, that's probably a sign he's just a lazy deadbeat, rather than he's going to spend all his time waiting on you hand and foot. Somebody has to pay the rent.
Maybe.
Somebody has to pay for your attic room there in Dublin 7.
Has to pay for me to look out the window on the road.
Yeah, exactly. That stuff doesn't come cheap. Thanks a million, Fionnuala and Esther and Leslie, as ever. That's our lot for today. Kieran's up next on The Hard Shoulder on News Talk. Our production team today, Aidan McKelvey, Claire Collins and Michael Quilligan. We'll talk to you on Monday at 2:00. Have a lovely weekend.
For the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to set, for the sun to rot, for the tree to drop. He is a strange and bitter cry.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Moncrief on News Talk.